This episode is brought to you by the Old Dominion Athletic Foundation. Because of you, we create winners in the classroom, in athletic competition, and in life. Become a member today.
Issue there? What happened there?
I don't know. Everything looked good over here.
Yeah, it looked good.
Oh, okay. Oh, it was just me then. All right. Oh. That's cool.
It's always you, CB.
That's usually true. Yeah.
Yes. Well, welcome, Monarch fans, to the Hudson Homers podcast. Got CB here. Got Finney here. CB tried to get his yeah, and I think his timing messed him up there a little bit.
I had no idea. I didn't see anything.
But before we get going, a big shout out to CB's mom for once again crushing the chocolate chip cookie order. I mean, our guys, she I'll bet she has made 10 tons of chocolate chip cookies since I've been here. And they are always amazing. And I never see anything but an empty Tupperware. We need to start giving those back to her.
She's okay if she doesn't get them back, but it is appreciated if nothing else.
We need to start doing a better job with that because those things aren't free, and the cookies are amazing. It reminded me, the latest one reminded me of when Coach Guz was with us. And she'd bring those in, and he'd always go, "Ooh."
I thought of that the other day when I thought of Guz the other day. I think it ended up being fog, but at first I thought maybe it was like smoke from them cleaning a grill. And I was like, ooh, hot dogs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Ooh, it smells like ham and cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
Yeah, the smoke from the grill doesn't travel into the dugout like it used to when it was over in Rally Alley.
Well, yeah. But it will next year again, so that'll be cool. And so speaking of, I know we got – some recaps to go, but I got a good story for the VCU game on Wednesday. Of course, it was, very much a back and forth game, and we weren't pitching, it's like home run derby for a while there. We weren't pitching very well early, but we were scrapping kind of back in it and back and forth, and we go into the top of the ninth, down 10-9. And the whole day, I was a little bit nostalgic just because thinking about Key Dahl, Coach Keys, and Guz, with that potentially being our last time ever playing at the Diamond. Just so many memories there. I worked there for 6 years with Paul, competing against VCU at ODU. We went back and looked at the records. I think in 15 years, we've only lost once or twice there. So we've won a lot there. And so we're down 10-9, I go jogging out to third. As slow as I run out there, I don't know if you can call it jog anymore, but I go out to third and I'm thinking, well, guys, if this is the last one, I'm going to need both of you. I know y'all are watching. I'm going to need a little help here.
Yeah.
And sure enough, when the shortstop threw just the tailor-made double play ball down the right field line and let us score two runs, I looked at him and I said, there you go. I'm just picturing Guz and Key Dahl eating some pizza and watching the game. And one of them stuck their foot out and said, kick it. And there we go. And the thing about that game was we were swinging the bats good too. It was an offensive game.
Yeah.
That's as small as I can ever remember the Diamond playing.
Yeah.
I ran into Connor Overton. He and Josh Eldridge were there. And Connor, he played there with you guys at ODU. He played there for the Squirrels for about, I think, a year and a half. And he's like, I have never seen this happen here.
No. And fortunately, we threw the ball. We didn't throw the ball well at the beginning of that game, but the last five innings we did, five zeros and
outstanding.
The guys really, Ben Tanton in particular and Bailey Metella both, threw up four zeros in a row. So we get the hard fought 12-10 win and send the diamond out on a good note. So it was a good midweek road win for us, and that's always a hard-fought game with them, certainly. And we had nice weather. It was warm, and so that was a good thing.
Yeah, Bailey looked unhittable in the final two innings of that game. I mean, guys were going up there bunting with nobody on. I mean, you could tell they just were not very confident going up there.
Well, and part of that, Bailey was pitching great. It was almost dark by then, too, by the way.
Yeah.
I looked at him and he goes, hey, man, I think 5:30, we're going to call this thing.
Yeah.
This was about 4:45, and I said, I can't see now. It sounds good to me. Like, but, you know, the other thing that in that game – you know, we had a lot of big hits as well, but I thought we played fantastic defense. And we've been very up and down defensively. Our guys, I've been on their butts about it. But Will Johnson and Maverick Stallings in particular really played well. Will made a number of really good plays, and so did Mav. Mav's been playing good defense all year. We've got to get cleaned up on the left side, and it's not – that those guys aren't capable. They just have to focus more. For one of them, it's more focused. The other one, he needs to, like, breathe through his eyelids, I think. You know?
Give him some garter belts.
Yeah, we got to work on that. But they're capable. I see it every day. They're good defenders, and with plenty of, you know, the skill set's plenty there. We just got to get – and some of it, I think, is getting back to getting the reps. You know, we had a very – disjointed first month of the season. I mean, we'd get a game in or two, and then we'd have two or three days of rain, and then we're getting a game, and we weren't able to get in. It's not an excuse by any means. You guys know me well enough for that, but just reality. We weren't able to get any work in. It was just getting the games in and playing. Sometimes we weren't even getting ground balls in between. And I think, you know, this weekend – we were able to get back to a little bit of a rhythm there, even though the weather was crappy Friday when the fog rolled in, you know.
Nuts.
But weird. In light of the person saying not to jumble all the games together, anything else about that Wednesday game comes to mind for you guys?
Yeah, I'll just throw in, like, I agree with you. I've never seen that many home runs hit out of that ballpark in any single game. It was almost like a wind tunnel to left center. But – your team maintained a ton of energy even when they were down 10-6. And CB and I were actually sitting together for part of that game talking, like, this is a midweek. We know that we're strong on the back end of our bullpen with what we have left, and we can just hang around here and chip away. We're going to be all right. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened, plus a little bit of intervention from people that couldn't be seen to make sure that double tailor-made double play ball ended up down the line.
Yeah, for sure. That was – well, sometimes you get unlucky, sometimes you get lucky. So we're not giving any of them back.
No. No.
So.
Yeah. And then I was going to say Friday, I feel like the game changed a little bit as the fog rolled in. But that was honestly a pretty good ball game. I mean, 4-2 against a really good opponent, tough pitching.
It was. Yeah, it was. And, you know, we knew they could pitch. The two guys they threw, I thought, threw fantastic. We had – you know, the same amount of hits. We just didn't get the big one. And the difference in that ball game, though, was we made three errors on balls that, you know, on plays that need to be made. And I thought Cusk, he threw the ball really well for us.
That's about as well as he's thrown all season.
I keep track of how many pitches guys throw, you know, how many potential pitches when you make an error on a routine ball, it costs your guy. And I think we cost him 25 pitches in that game, which is the difference in coming out after the fourth or fifth and maybe getting through six. And so we talk about that a lot. I really believe and know you tip your hat to them because they pitched well, made pitches when they need to and the plays, but we kind of gave them the game, if we're being honest. And that's disappointing on a Friday. You got to be better than that. I think we've been swinging the bats, you know, all week we swung the bats pretty well. We didn't score on Friday and Saturday. Saturday was just, again, we got behind too early. And, you know, with another game to play, we just couldn't burn up a bunch of guys Saturday. So that's just kind of how it goes sometimes. But I told him, I said, there's going to be times in league play where you lose the first two. And the difference between, you know, having a good record and making the tournament and not is that Sunday game. Can you guys come out and be ready to play? We're not that far away from playing well. We just got to play better, you know? And, I mean, it sounds easy, but it sometimes is a big step. And we got to certainly pitch better. We were terrible on the mound on Saturday, and I told all of them Gaddy was bad, and, you know, he's got to get himself figured out. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But however, I will say this. Sometimes, you know, silver linings, right? I thought a couple freshmen came in and threw the ball well. And Chris Cavalcante, that's his second outing in a row, throwing the ball well for us. Maddox Jack, second outing in a row, throwing the ball pretty well. He gave up a home run on a hanging breaking ball. But, you know, the ball's coming out of both those guys' hands, 92, 94 on the fastball.
Yeah.
And it shows some potential to be pretty good. So we, you know, we got to come back out and battle and fight like crazy to win one game on Sunday. And the guy, you know, it's an early game. I mean, we're out there at 9 a.m. and you lost an hour. So it's really 8 a.m. for batting practice. And we had some really good energy and the work was good in our pregame work. And the guys came out ready to play, man. TJ hits the home run the first, and we give up a home run. And however, there wasn't any panic. The guys were into it. I thought Sheehy settled down and threw a couple zeros up there after that. He was good. You know, Hubble worked out of a jam in his one inning, and then Ben Tanton came in and did nine straight hitters. You know. And that gave us a chance to expand that lead. Mav hits a big three-run homer. And TJ drives in a run with two outs. That's what we didn't have going on in the first two games of the series. And Late hits a homer to get us up 6-3. And you know, they don't score in that eighth if we turn that double play. I mean, that's just that simple. And I said, that's the difference between winning and losing. Like, yeah, it was hit hard, but it was right at you. Cats got to catch that and throw it across. It's tailor-made double play ball. And those are the things we haven't gotten in a groove on yet, is those plays. And you just have to be ready for them, man. So we give up a couple, make it 6-5. They had Kellen's grips. You know, he's got to change something in his delivery so he's not giving his pitches away. And we knew that. But it's a great story on this. So we in between innings, we switch it up. So, you know, they were calling out Verbals for his curveball. He gets the first two guys out in the ninth, and then the guy we just couldn't get out, that big giant first baseman, just kept wherever we played, he hit it somewhere else. And he gets on, and they pinch run for him. Well, they had been getting Kellen's grips coming into his glove. We called a pick. And Kellen, and this is just a senior, man. This is a fifth-year senior having some feel. He said he purposely came into his glove. You know, normally you get the pick sign, you come into your glove with a fastball grip. He purposely came into his glove with the curveball grip and then switched it. And we heard him call the verbal. And so the guy was going to steal on the curveball. And he hopped, and we threw a glove drop pick and picked him off, and game over. So, anyway, that's kind of a, you know, behind the scenes thing that people don't see, because everybody's going, "What in the world is that guy doing?"
Yeah,
you know, he picked off by a mile, but they had given him the verbal to go. And so, you know, it was a good ending. I mean, we deserved to win that game. We played better than they did. I think we out hit them. You know, I don't know, 11 or 12 to 7 or something like that. And they got three of those hits in the eighth inning after the double play that wasn't turned. So, but I thought our guys played well. That's where you got to play on Sundays, have a good shot at winning. And we certainly pitched much better. We pitched well on Friday and Sunday. We didn't pitch well Saturday.
Yeah, you talk about the pitching performance. You know, Friday, you get 10 strikeouts to 5 walks. I thought that was a pretty big deal by your pitching staff to keep you in that 4-2 game on Friday. And then Saturday, a little bit different. It was 8-8, and there were some hit-by-pitches there too. And what I felt like really just slowed us down and killed any momentum on that Saturday game was the first, the leadoff hitter in the first seven innings reached base safely. Yep. And I think five of those were walks and hit by a pitch. Didn't see that on Sunday, and you got back to the dugout quicker. The other guys were just kind of gassed standing in the field that long.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gaddy threw, you know, three innings, walked four guys. Like, yeah, can't happen. I mean, you can't overcome those. And we gave him a bunch of them, certainly on Saturday. But, you know, the ability to be resilient, and we talked about Sunday, like resiliency just means you just keep picking your butt up out of the dirt no matter how many times you get knocked down. And you've got to be able to do that. And the teams that develop that ability, you know, usually end up having a pretty decent season. And this group has shown that from an energy standpoint. And look, we know we got to create our own energy. It's not an intimidating place to play right now with the fans being so far away. We get it. We appreciate everybody that comes out and watches us. But, I mean, you know, if you're a visiting team, you're like, sweet, man, this is great. And so it is what it is, right?
Unless you're the left fielder, then you're kind of crap.
Left fielder gets it right now. But I heard some people yapping him up the other day.
Oh, Bo was getting into somebody yesterday. Yeah. I could hear him because I had moved down to the hitting facility on the wall, and I could hear him out there left. I don't know if it's the left fielder or the center fielder, but somebody was getting the business from Bo out there.
Good. I love it. But I really, you know what, I'll tell you this. It was we lost two out of three. I get it. But it was an enjoyable series to play. I'd never played UConn before in 36 years of coaching, period. Never played them once, which is amazing to think.
I was surprised ODU had played them at all. We had like one game we'd played.
Yeah, Jim said they played here when Guz was here. Yeah. Well, one game. But it was a midweek they were coming up through or something like that, and they won here. But I'd never coached against Jim Penders. What a great guy. Their whole coaching staff were fantastic. I thought their kids played hard. They didn't run their mouths. Yeah. Like, very classy series. No issues, you know, with any of the BS that goes on, you know, in some places. So I hope we can keep playing them in the future. I think we're working on 28 schedule. And, you know, they're always going to be one of the top teams in the Northeast.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And they were playing without their best hitter, kid last name of Minnick, who had some nerve stuff, played center field for him normally. So I think you had that guy, that lineup. It's a pretty potent lineup. And I'll tell you what, man, I got to tip my hat to that big first baseman. He swung and missed one time the entire week, once. And he hits the ball all over the place really hard, and we kept trying to get in on him, and he would get pieces of it. I think Tanton finally jammed him and popped him up, but even that was like a 300-foot pop-up to the infield, you know?
He was not happy the couple times they got him out, too. He was not pleased.
And it's interesting. That guy was nobody. I asked the head Jim about him, Jim Penders, their head coach, and he said, man, everybody passed on that kid out of high school. He's missing two bones. He's missing a bone in each of his feet. And he was just very kind of uncoordinated, but he was a good basketball player. And so he ended up going to, New Hampshire? He was in New Hampshire or something like that out of high school and played his freshman year and tore it up. I think it was a D2 All-American, and then wanted to transfer. And so they took him that time, and that was a pretty good move on that part because that big dude is scary.
Like, mash,
he is scary. Like, for a guy to be that big, 6'8", 270, and be able to make bat-to-ball contact like he does, it's an elite level hand-eye coordination, man. And I think he, you know, and he wasn't terrible at first. Now, he can't run a lick, but he was fine around the bag. And what a presence in the middle of your lineup. You know, I was really impressed with him.
Jackson Marshall is his name, 6'8", 275. He's a big
list of like 6'7", 6'8" hitters, like just all time major league is like five guys. It's like Aaron Judge and Frank Howard and Richie Sexton. I mean, it's like it's not easy to do at that height.
No, it's not. You know, we had the Tyser kid here a few years ago.
Yeah,
he was 6'7", and He was long, though. He had some swing and miss in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, he's not in a class by himself, but it doesn't take too long to call a roll.
You could, yeah, you could make a list pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah. I was very impressed. And he hit everything. And he was swinging. Like, he wasn't in there to take any pitches. Nah. But he was swinging, and he could hit them all. So, I think that guy, man, that's for him to just be a sophomore. Like, they got potential to have something there as he keeps growing as a hitter.
If his hands get any faster, he's going to be a big problem. Because that's the thing with, like, the 6'7 guys you're talking about with Tyser being a long swing. The hands don't get through the zone fast enough, and you can throw a lot of breaking stuff to get them. You throw him whatever you want. He saw the shift and just looked at it as a challenge. If he's not hitting it out, he's going to beat the shift one way or another.
I know.
He's killing it.
I think I don't remember who it was. Maybe Lake told me, you know, the one he hit up the middle that Matt was playing right there, and he was just cussing the whole time down the first. And then he just decided to hit it through the shift. Like,
yeah.
A couple of those, I said, all right, that's, you know, hard hit. It's going to be right at our shortstop. But he was – you know, we had moved him over, and then he just was hitting them where we weren't, man. So, you know, the old school stuff says, like, long lever guys, you try to crowd them. You know, you want to throw them hard in and try to get inside the barrel. And we were able to do that a couple times, but not enough. And that guy, I mean, he was not off-timed on breaking balls at all. Mm-hmm. Like, he sees it. You can tell hitters when they see it, that balance. Those are the guys who go, oh boy, don't throw that again.
We're talking about the shifting. I noticed this at the VCU game, and maybe they just play extreme shifts as part of their defense, but they had every infielder on the right side of second base against TJ Aiken. And I was a little surprised because I don't think of TJ as a dead pull hitter at all.
Well, I don't either. But I think what happens, especially early in the year, is guys are going off sprays from their career. And so TJ does show up as a lot of pull ground balls. He's a much better approach this year. Like, he gets inside the ball, he hits it the other way. He's not just a pull on the ground guy like he used to be. And so I think that's, you know, we'll see. I hope people keep playing him that way because
he's
getting some free hits by doing that. And we talk about, like, if you got to, you know, you can't just be a robot. If you climb up there and you see all those guys over there, hit the ball the other way.
Bunt if you're TJ.
And, you know, he hit a home run and got a bunt down yesterday. That was good.
Drove
the ball up the middle with two outs for another RBI. TJ's off to a great start for us. We're really
so awesome to see
how he's doing. Yeah, because he had a tough year last year. That sophomore slump can be real, man. You know, we got a couple other young guys that are starting to trend in the right direction. I thought Nick Felton hit the ball really hard at VCU, lined out a couple times, took a two-strike pitch and hit it in the six hole, beat it out. Mm-hmm. Like, he's starting to show some signs of being the guy that we think he's going to be. And then another guy that, look, man, this is where fall baseball can trick you, was really not very good in the fall at all. And going into the spring, like, there were some days he didn't even take batting practice on game day because he wasn't in the top 15 or 16 guys. But then his work was better, and we'd noticed, and he was starting to make some improvements. And he's gotten in there a little bit lately and had some really good at-bats. Bennett Siegel. He came in there yesterday in the DH spot and got his first college hit. And then he whacked the ball to center field that just missed, you know, one there. But he's coming along. He's a strong kid. He's a left-handed hitter. He's a tough kid. And he's a good example of – we talk to the guys about working while you wait. Shows up, having a good attitude, being coachable, doing your work every day. I was like, you guys, we see it. We see how you carry yourself. We see the look on your face, you know. I call it the sour lemon face. Are you over there going like that when you're playing?
Yeah.
Or are you just into it going, okay, man, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
Bennett's one of those guys that hasn't ever complained once. He just shows up. He does his work. And he has been a good hitter. So I believe he's got an innate belief in himself that he can hit. He just had some poor hitting instruction growing up. Guys, it was that whole swing up thing. And he was hitting the top of the cage every other swing and batting practice. And so Hage and Paulie have done a good job with flattening him out. Now he's able to get the barrel out in front, and he's whacking balls, man. So I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good hitter here in the future. And Nick Felton as well.
Yeah. Really, it's great to see. The top half of your lineup is hitting the ball pretty well, I feel like. Ooh. I mean, Will, TJ, I mean, Zach's hitting 442, Maverick's up to 423, and Zidal's hitting 395. I mean, your top six spots in the lineup are producing for you right now, and it's kind of the plug-and-play other positions that I think you're still trying to work through.
Yeah, and Cash finally had a good day Friday. He should have had a home run. I mean, that went blowing in 25 miles an hour, got him. And he had three hits besides that. He hit a ball hard. He's just, you know, he got off to a bad start. He whacked one at the shortstop yesterday, 100-plus miles an hour. The guy made a good play, knocked it down, threw him out. He's showing some signs of coming around. Zidalis is off to a good – compared to a year ago, he's night and day a better hitter in every way. And I think
he has more hits than he had last season.
Yeah, exactly. And he's striking out less. He's still going to strike out some, but much less. He's much more of a threat. His pitch selection has been better. And I think he's, you know, getting more and more comfortable in the outfield. We played him in left this weekend, and he looked fine out there. So,
yeah, I like him in left field.
I do too. Yeah. It's funny about corner outfield positions. Some guys, like Grayson Spahr, is much better than right than in left.
Right.
And that's the guy we didn't talk about. I thought Spahr had some good at bats this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He had a hit in every game. He had a double yesterday, hit a double at VCU. So he had some productive at bats for us. And he'll definitely be a guy, I think, against lefties that, you know, is going to be in the lineup because.
It was an interesting weekend for you with the three lefty starters. You got to see some right handed hitters that maybe hadn't had some of those opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. And with Morales being out, you know, that takes a DH option a little bit. You know, he'd be the guy that would definitely DH against lefties. Mm-hmm. And so we're still waiting to hear about his hand and how he is. So, and on that note, I think we're going to hear sometime in the next week about Luke and if we're going to be able to get him back or not with his appeal. Our people feel like that's imminent one way or another, and that'll be good for everybody to know. Obviously, obviously, you add a hitter like that to your lineup, it's you know, can make everybody better. You know, and your most experienced, most productive hitter you've had, you put him back in the lineup, and now you've got a much longer lineup, right? It's going to bump somebody down, and you also got a guy that's been a run producer that you can stick back in there. And you know, it's like one of those things, like maybe it's a guy you can hit behind late to protect him or in front of and things like that. So we'll see. We'll just keep our fingers crossed and see if we can get him first. And, you know, it'll be a big shot in the arm for us.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Luke's long-term plans or anything like that, but I was wondering as the season went on, do we reach a point where the NCAA says, yes, you can have an extra year? And because we're like 50% of the way into the season, does Luke think about rolling that year to next year?
I don't think they would do that. I think they're going to make a decision here in the next week. And it's going to be you got it or you don't. So, you know, be unfortunate if they – I mean, we wouldn't complain because we'd have them, but it'd be unfortunate that it would take so long. Lost a month of the season.
Right.
But we'd better the last, you know, 40-something games than none.
Yeah. So, get the conference play at least would be nice.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a little mid-season acquisition for you. That's all.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Called him up, right?
Yes. Well, on the topic of injuries, I did get an update today. Marcus Van Alstyne had successful UCL surgery. Awesome. Should be back with the team here in a week or so. That's from his dad. Let us know. So thank you to his dad for listening and also just a good news update on Marcus.
Yeah, that's I know that I'm sure that's a big loss. That's why it's been nice seeing, you know, a guy like a Ben Tanton stepping up and some of these other guys really showing up in the bullpen when you needed it.
Well, it's a huge loss. He was our best reliever and most experienced reliever. He was really throwing the ball well. And, you know, between him and Baines, we had two guys that we thought were really going to, you know, solidify that bullpen. down there, but we don't have them. And so it's opportunities for other guys to step up. And, you know, guys like Jace Park, man, Jace off to
Jace, yeah.
Patrick Johnson, you know, if we could get Ben Canton's coming on, if we can get some more out of Chris Cavalcante and Maddox Jack, I think those two guys in particular are certainly capable of, you know, doing it. And you know, the way that things are shaking out, I think it's going to be a pitching staff that probably, and we've had to do this similarly before, I think we're probably going to be more in groups or pods of guys that kind of float around, other than Cusky. Like, Cusky's probably going to be your everyday Friday or Saturday guy. It could be Saturday. That makes it the easiest to do this other thing around them. And then, you know, the groups of guys that throw on Tuesday will come back and throw on Sunday. The group of guys that throw on Friday will come back and throw the following Tuesday, like that. 2 3-innings, 50 pitches. And so you're getting more outings out of guys each week, just not as long potentially. And there's been years where that's been really effective. And you can make it through a whole year with, you know, 8 to 10 guys that are throwing the ball well and keep them all healthy and out there. And sometimes, you know, you tell a guy, hey man, we need 6 outs out of you. They go out there and burn it up a little bit for you. And, you know, that's the thing, you know, it may make them a little more consistent, rather than just throwing once a week.
Yeah, I know Okonkwo was down this week. I think you said last week it was some shoulder soreness. How is he doing? Is he on track potentially for East Carolina?
He's doing better. He won't throw tomorrow, but he'll be back on the board for this weekend. He was just a little bit underwater. I think, you know, sometimes it happens. I mean, these freshmen have to be ready, you know, so much earlier than they're ever used to. Some cases, you know, 6 to 8 weeks earlier, which is significant. And so I think that can happen sometimes for those guys. And we were on top of it. Mike's usually on top of those things really well. And so, you know, that kid's got a chance to have a bright future. So we just, you know, shut him down for a couple of weeks, and then we'll burn him back, work him back up, and see how we can get him in there.
Gotcha. At some points this weekend against UConn, I felt like we were playing a previous year version of ODU, where they have these really strong left-handed starters, a couple boppers in the lineup that can hit it, and everyone was just super scrappy at the plate. And I looked at him like, I don't know if that's the 21 team, the 22 team, what that was, but it felt like I was looking in the mirror a little bit throughout some of this weekend and be like, that's a team I've seen before.
Yeah, and they're Friday – guy was fantastic. I really liked him. And I thought we did a decent job against them. And their next two starters we hit, their coach was like, y'all hit those other two guys harder than they've been hit all year. But having left-handed good starting pitch in college baseball is always a plus, without a doubt. So, and look, I thought their Friday and Saturday, the two relievers they brought in were fantastic. The relievers yesterday weren't as good, but those first two guys, like, that's a pretty good 1-2 combination for each of those games. You know, you may roll through a bunch of games and only throw 4 guys and have everybody else left for Sunday. So their pitching coach has always done a great job. And, you know, those guys, I thought they pitched with the fastball really well. I thought we, you know, again, it was good for us because we hadn't seen a lot of left-handed pitching going into this weekend, and we needed to, and we saw 3 good ones, and I thought our guys had a good plan. I thought they stuck with it. We just couldn't get those big hits on Friday and Saturday, and we finally got a couple of them yesterday. Yeah.
So big week coming up. You got a road trip down to ECU, which is always a tough place to play. Always a good team. And then starting conference play, you know, starting off easy, going down to Troy to play the Trojans.
Yeah, East Carolina is always a, you know, fun game. It's a tough to win at, as you mentioned. But having said that, we've won down there a fair amount.
Yeah.
So usually good games. And we feel like we've got enough arms on the board to give us a chance to win that game. And it's a good hitter's park. It's going to be a warm day. So We'll see. And then heading down to Troy. Troy's record is probably a little misleading right now. They played a really tough schedule early. They do have some guys banged up that we've been hearing about. So we'll see what their lineup looks like. But our first time down there in Sun Belt play. I've been down there before. This when I was at Western Kentucky a bunch. It's a good park to hit in, especially for left-handed hitters. They got that green monster and. Or the black monster, whatever color it is, that the scoreboard's actually in right field, and it's short down that right field line into the gap. There, you got to get it up. It's probably 30 feet tall, but it definitely comes into play, and so that's where hopefully our some of our left-handed hitters will be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, Zach's got to start pulling more balls because he's hitting too many home runs to center field. That's not going to get out everywhere in the league. Center field.
Yeah, don't you ever tell him that, Gary. Like, right and that no. hitter he is, right? When he stays in the middle of the field, man, he's really good. And, the ball he hit Saturday at the guy Robin from for I thought was going to leave late, I don't know, in the seventh or eighth, whatever, but he's locked in right now, man. He's kind of in the middle of all the good things that are happening for us offensively, for sure.
He's a tough out at that plate. I mean, hitting 442, four home runs, 27 ribbies. I think he's top seven in RBIs. Yeah. So, I mean, you got some offensive guys having a hell of a year this year.
Well, Mav, the cool thing is Mav's off to a much better start than he had in the first 2 years where he's
ever
like
been
100 the first month of the season.
I mean, we did the math last year. It was like April 15th both years before he started hitting. And it was like disgusting how not good he was. Yeah, right. So it's been a nice surprise.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think Mav's a Florida guy. He likes it when it's warm. Right? So I told him it's going to be in the 80s this weekend. So he's but he's off to a better start. I think some of that, too, is I told him, I said, look, you just play good defense, have good energy. You're not coming out whether you get a hit or not. And I think sometimes when guys hear that, they relax a little more and know they're going to be in there. And as much as he's hitting, he's played fantastic defense at the beginning.
Yes.
And he's made so many good plays and – and I'm really happy about that. That's a part of his game he's worked really hard on. Takes a lot of pride in it. And he's really developed into a really, really good second baseman.
I'll give Zach Late some flowers as well defensively at first base. The improvement is impressive. And he's made some big plays on weird ground balls to first this year.
Yeah, he's gotten better. He's worked hard on it. And, it's those two guys. I mean, they're playing like fifth-year seniors you'd expect them to play. Right now, so we need him to keep that way, and that's what you want. And we got Scotty back in the lineup a little bit this week, coming off the knee injury, still not quite himself. I thought he had really good batting practice today. Looked like he was getting a little bit. Sometimes when you hurt that front knee, it changes your just how you brace up, swinging, and things like that. So I think he's starting to feel a little bit better, and he was one of our better hitters in the fall and in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Hasn't quite gotten it going yet, but I think he will.
He's going to bring the energy for it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
He's going to bring it. Well, I think I know where maybe some of Maverick's Florida energy has come in early this year. I got some pictures from Angie Hollibetz and Craig Brown from down at spring training. I got Sam Armstrong, Dylan Brown, and John Hollibetz. They all had dinner together a few nights ago. I don't think Noah and Blake could join, but you got quite a few Monarchs there on the west coast of Florida and some spring training camps. Potentially may see Hollibetz throw a pro game in spring training here soon. We'll keep you updated on that. But they didn't just bring the players, of course. Anytime these groups get together, they got the whole crew with them having a good time down there in Florida.
That's super cool, isn't it? And, watching anybody that's been watching the World Baseball Classic, obviously with Jared Young playing for Team Canada and Yarby with Team USA and Vinny with Team Italy. That's been neat. I'm going to watch that USA game tonight, I think, at 8.
Yeah.
USA and Mexico, that should be a good game. Mexico's beaten us three of the last four.
Mexico's got the big boys. They got, Rowdy Tellez and Alejandro Kirk. Yeah, they got the guys with my body type I like to watch.
And the pregame spread is all tacos.
Yes.
Yes. Get in the door price today was $300.
Wow. Oh
my just to God. Get in the door. Yeah.
How about that? That's unbelievable. But that's been cool to watch, you know. I'd love to see Italy be able to come, you know, finish second in our pool in advance. That'd be neat. And they got a chance.
That'd be great.
They got a chance. So
they got the espressos for the home runs. That's good fun stuff. Vinny is a unique character. That guy really gets it.
Yeah, he is very unique. They definitely broke the mold when they made the fast squad. Hey, and
they might have broken on purpose after that.
I know you guys have Jack getting ready to come on, and I just wanted to say something. You know, I've known Jack basically since he was born. His dad, Tommy, his mom, Beth, they're just, you know, lifelong friends of mine. And Jack has been just a joy to have in our program. And he's playing really well right now. In fact, he's going to catch tomorrow. But Jack has a job lined up. When he graduates, he's going to go into the Secret Service. His uncle, his mom's brother, was a career Secret Service guy. JT Tanney was his name. But so talk to Jack a little bit about that. He's a perfect candidate for that. He's had to jump through some hoops and work around some stuff to go through all the, you know, the things that you have to go through to get a job like that. So he's got like one more thing. He's got to pass a physical and take a test or something like that. But it'd be a neat thing to mention with him. And, you know, just really, really proud of Jack and the type of young man he is and how he represents our program. And it's fun to watch him, you know, getting an opportunity to play a little bit more this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're excited to have him and thankful as always to have you on here. And also shout out to ODU for all the access we've gotten this year. I think I found my rally spot right there on the corner.
Oh, good.
I'm hitting facility. Yeah. I'm going to stay there because we do all right when I'm standing there.
Well, we got about 9 days till we'll be back, back at home. So, what is it, Norfolk State that following Wednesday?
Yeah, next Wednesday.
Hopefully, more than likely, the weather forecast for the extended is wrong. Hopefully, it'll be better. But, know, what's interesting, man, the field, just with the warmer temp, the field's already starting to green up on its own. And so I think when we get back and get that thing going, it's going to start purling for us. And that's exciting. The roof's just about done at the field. I took some cool pictures of that today. So it's starting to look pretty neat. We're excited, you know, to see that continue to grow.
Yeah, it was awesome to have the live music out there on Saturday too. They were playing under the tent by the concession stand. There were a good number of people out there. It was great weather on Saturday and Sunday for baseball, and I was happy to see the fans come out. But I just can tell you, like, Rick French, that whole crew, just an amazing job making that not look temporary. Like, it looks like it's been there. It's developed. They know what they're doing. Just great fan experience again.
And we got the – for the fans, I noticed today when we were hitting, they've got the miles per hour up on the scoreboard now. So
nice. My mom will be happy.
The rest of the time. And
that's the thank you for the cookies. You gave her the thank you back.
The next thing, I think the parts coming in this week to fix the clock. So we're getting back to operational.
Well, now you just need iPads out there with the TrackMan data. So that way the people that are 375 feet away can actually call balls and strikes from
there. You go. That's right. Yeah. That's a neat thing. So, well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
All right.
Look forward to talking to y'all again after the week on the road.
Absolutely. Be safe, man. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you, Vinny.
Bye. All right.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
The Old Dominion Athletic Foundation, or commonly referred to as the ODAF, was established in 1964 as a nonprofit organization. The mission of the ODAF is to raise financial support for ODU athletics to ensure that our coaches and student athletes have the resources necessary to compete for championships. The ODAF is integral to the success of ODU Athletics and is the channel through which our fans and alumni can partner with our coaches and student athletes for the advancement of the athletics program. Through the generous efforts of our donors, loyal fan base, and community, the ODU alumni from around the globe, the ODAF raises money for student athletic scholarship support and endowments, capital projects, program-specific support, and athletic department operations. Funds are raised through annual giving, multi-year pledges, events, premium seating, and planned giving. With questions about how to get involved in one or more of these initiatives, reach out to an ODAF representative. Gifts to the ODAF are investments in the lives of our student-athletes. ODAF members receive exclusive benefits such as priority points for postseason and away game seating, parking, VIP, and hospitality experiences, and more. Because of you, we create winners in the classroom, in athletic competition, and in life. Contact the ODAF and become a member today.
All right, welcome back, Monarch fans. Great to hear from Finney. I feel like we got a lot of good info about him and planning and all of that
from
stuff.
From Finney, we never get good info from Finney. Come on.
No, he's always cloak and dagger. What are you talking about?
He's real secretive. He doesn't talk a lot about everything.
That's very true. That's what we appreciate about Finney, I think, more than anything else. Is you're going to get the truth. He's not going to sugarcoat it. If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, speaking of good, we have our guest this week, Jack Slater, coming on. So please welcome to the Hudson Orange Podcast, Jack Slater. How's it going, Jack?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you all for having me.
Good. All right. Yes. Appreciate you being here, buddy.
Yeah, we were commiserating a little bit before we started recording on just like I got sunburned this weekend. Jack, looks like you avoided it, but you were well prepared.
Yeah, Hannah had some sunscreen in the dugout for me, which is nice.
Yes, gotta watch out for us guys that burn super easy. But would love to just get your thoughts on playing at VCU and this weekend against UConn.
Yeah, VCU was cool. That's my parents live in Richmond now, so I got to see my mom, which is always good. Give her a hug after the game. And then kind of a crazy game, just a bunch of home runs, which is unlike the Diamond, but being able to get a win there was awesome, especially in the ninth inning. And then UConn, it didn't go exactly how we wanted it to, but being able to scratch that game Sunday was pretty good for everybody.
And, you know, kind of a strange weekend where, you know, a lot of lefty pitchers kind of kept you from really getting a chance out there. But you've gotten a lot of chances to play this year. Tell me how that's been different for you than your first couple of years here with the team.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fun just being able to be out there and play more. I mean, as long as we're winning, I don't really care what my role is that day.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, I mean, playing baseball is fun. That's why I'm still here as an old man, so.
Well, so that's a question because you're a fifth year guy. You got the extra JUCO year, right? Which you know, I think Scotty pointed out one time. He's like, you're the only class of guys who have ever had that. Maybe we'll ever have that. Mm-hmm. He's like, I like the way Scotty put it, like, don't deserve it. I'm going to enjoy it. So for you, was there ever a point where you were like, you know what? I've had my 4 years. I'm going to go. I mean, we said Finney brought it up, and I'm sure we'll talk about it some about the Secret Service. Was there any point where you're like, I'm just going to go on? Or was like, no, you know, why wouldn't I go back and play one more year with my guys and have fun?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a decision last year. I wasn't sure if I was done or not, but I kind of looked at it like in 5 years from now, I'd probably look back and regret not being able to go enjoy a win with the guys after a good win, or just like the everyday joking around in the cage, man. That's what it's really all about. So, yeah, being able to come back for one more year. And like Scotty said, I didn't do anything to deserve it, but I'm here. So,
yeah. They're giving it out for free. Definitely take it. And no. Hold on to college great as long choice. As you can. It's not any better out here, I promise. Well, obviously, you had time at ODU when the Bud was the Bud, and then you had the year on the road, and now you're kind of back in the Bud in a little bit different configuration. How's it been for you getting back to being playing games actually at home and in Norfolk?
It's awesome. I mean, just not having to be on the road 24/7 is really nice. Like, don't get me wrong, we got to play at some really awesome places last year, but being able to sleep in your own bed and cook food and not rely on the hotel or anything else is awesome. And then being able to have fans actually root for you is really cool too.
Where was your favorite away game last year with that schedule?
Auburn for sure. I used to live there. Yeah. Still have some friends and family over there, so that was really cool for me.
How old were you when you guys were at Auburn?
We moved when I was in kindergarten, so probably about 5 or 6 years old. I was probably there for 3 years, maybe.
Yeah.
4 years. Yeah.
Yeah, for folks who don't know, you know, your dad, Tom, his 35-year career as a coach, college, you know, was a head coach at Auburn, head coach at VMI. He worked with the Yankees for a long time, big league coach of the Mets, currently with the Florida Gators, was even their head coach for just a little while, for a few months while they needed him. What's that been like growing up with your dad just being in baseball your entire life?
I mean, it's awesome. like I've gotten to do more cool things and experience more baseball probably than anybody my age other than actual professional baseball players. I get to spend summers with him and got to catch bullpens and basically be a part of the team this summer, which was awesome for me. And then like growing up, meeting the people I watch on TV was one of the coolest things ever.
What team are you with this past summer? With the Phillies?
The Reading Phillies. That's who my dad was with before he got the job at Florida. So I spent the whole summer with them, and it was awesome.
That's fantastic. That was one thing I wanted to ask. Of, I'm sure, like you said, many cool things. Can you think of something like off the top of your head? Like, this is like, if my dad wasn't who he is, I wouldn't have had this experience, and this experience was amazing. Like, is there anything that you're like, top of the list? Like, this was the coolest.
Yeah, when he was with the Yankees, Derek Jeter was rehabbing, and I got to take ground balls with him when I was like 10.
Yeah, and
when I was that age, I didn't realize how cool that was because I was like, this yeah, is what my dad does. But looking back, like, that's the coolest things ever.
That's okay, good. I didn't even know what you were gonna say, but that was gonna beat anything I could have guessed. That's pretty phenomenal. Yeah,
yeah. A good one. Hard to stop getting ground balls with Jeter. I guess bucket list.
I actually have.
It's also
with him, and all my friends like to kind of give me a hard time with it. So,
okay. The hard time is I'm the one with Jeter. What are you guys talking about? Like, do you have a picture with Jeter? Or you not? Oh, okay. I don't know where hard time over. I won. But I do wonder too, like, you know, with your dad playing ball, not playing, coaching all the time, has that been a thing where sometimes he hasn't been able to see you because, you know, obviously his job is happening the same time that you're playing your games?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of the only downside about what his job is there was, like, when he was in the big leagues, he was from January 15th until whenever the season ended, he was gone. That was when I was in high school. And, but I got to give a lot of credit to not only him, because, like, even when he wasn't physically there, he was always present. I would talk to him every day. We have a great relationship that's not revolved around baseball. It's just my dad, really. And then my mom is really the rock star of the family. She raised my sister and I those months alone, and, like, she's awesome. If you've ever met her, she's the joy of the world. So
she is. She's a wonderful dad. That's kind of the true in all ways. The moms are the best. I mean, that's just kind of true no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you're in a pretty loaded catcher's room, obviously, with Mac Dye coming in. You got Evan Holman, who also, I think, would have a similar sentiment for his mother as well.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that experience of being in a really talented catcher's room.
Yeah, it's been really cool. Like, having Mac come in, we live together. He's awesome. And getting to see all the success he's having is really cool. And it's opened up some cool opportunities for me and Evan. We've both been able to play other positions. I think I carry 5 gloves to the field nowadays, so it's been fun.
What are these 5 gloves? Because I can think of is catcher and outfield. What are you carrying these? Gloves doing?
I've got 2 catcher's mitts just in case one breaks, and then I've got Luke Waters outfield glove. I've got a first baseman, and then I've got a glove for second base because there was an inter squad where I got to play second.
Yeah, why not? Sure, okay. I used to do that in high school too, even though I was left-handed, to have the small glove for second base because you never know.
Yep.
You might actually have that chance though.
We'll see. Hopefully not, because that means something happened to Mav. So hopefully I stay to the other ones.
See, that's a true teammate right there. I like that.
If you were going to pick one of those positions to play instead of catch one day, what would be your favorite?
Okay, so none of those, because I always joke with Marin, I want to pitch. I want to play one game and pitch, but first base is pretty similar to catching, not like necessarily like with the pitches, but like just keeping the ball in front of you and picking it. That's probably the most directly related to it.
You've been out there slinging the bullpen. The Mets were like, Bryce Windham used to do that like once a week. He would go out and take a bullpen just to try.
Not yet. I'm still trying to talk Marin into it, so we'll see.
Vinny Pasquantino like would like every other day do a bullpen for like 3 years, convinced at one point they were going to let him pitch. Yeah. That's awesome. Don't let the dream die, Jack. It can happen.
I'll keep bothering him until he lets me do it.
I think Kenny Lavari did that too, or at least he would go in and throw one pitch at like 94 plus and then be like, anytime, I'm ready.
So how did you end up at ODU? I mean, obviously, you know, you've known Finney your entire life. I have to imagine that had something to do with it.
Yeah, so that's kind of a funny story. Out of high school, I was getting recruited by my junior college I ended up going to, and then here, and by Hage at VMI. Okay. And then after my 2 years of junior college, Hage was now here, and he gave me a call, and obviously Finney was here too, and they were like, hey, we need a catcher to come in. I was like, yeah, of course. So
it worked out. All right. So the
kind of one big circle, really.
Yeah, the interest is always there. It was always going to be the VMI guys or at ODU.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. What do you like best about being here? Because, I mean, like, you grew up kind of all over, right?
Mm-hmm. I grew up mostly in Tampa, but in my early life, I lived in a few different spots.
Okay. So what do you like most about here in Norfolk?
Like the city?
Yeah, sure.
I like how it's going to sound weird. Similar it is to Tampa. Like it's a big city, but not like massive like New York where you feel crammed. I like that it's by the water and that it does snow sometimes, but it usually stays pretty warm.
No, absolutely. I haven't been to Tampa. I totally agree with all your points there. I think you're dead on. It's all one thing I've always said. I like that it's a city and there's stuff happens, but it's not like insane. Yeah, I'm with you.
I can get in and out of downtown in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Anymore, so. Right.
Yeah. Yes. You still got some bridges with traffic over bodies of water, but other than that, you're not going to.
Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah. So who do you root for Major League Baseball?
I'm with the Phillies right now. It kind of changed just based on who my dad was working with. And that was the last team. So that's just where I'm stuck at right now.
It's like the Dave Chappelle, like I've done commercials for Coke and Pepsi and we say Pepsi paid me last. So they're better.
I grew up a Yankees fan, so that was who I grew up mostly rooting for, but with all the teams he's been with, it's changed, so.
Yeah.
Wasn't sure if you had any Tampa allegiances there. I'm a Tampa Bay Lightning fan, so I don't know if you've been in any hockey games down there. They're fun.
Yeah, those are the most fun sporting events I've ever been to.
That's awesome.
The Lightning games.
Yeah, they are. Cool. They are.
Well, you were probably there when they were really good, too.
Mm-hmm. It was a cool year. The Rays made the World Series, and then I think – the Bucks and the Lightning both won that year, so it was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Pretty well. A lot of obviously Norfolk and Tampa Bay hockey connections there because John Cooper was the coach in Norfolk with a lot of the guys ended up going up one more level to the Bolts. So you'll see a lot of Go Bolt stickers around the 757, and that's the main reason why.
Nice.
Awesome. What do you guys see, B? I don't want to cut you off.
I don't want to cut you off, sir. I cut you off all the time. I'm sorry.
Well, looking ahead to East Carolina this week and then Troy over the weekend, anything mindset-wise change for you as you're getting really close to getting into the Sun Belt play now?
No, not really. I mean, at the end of the day, all the games are the same. You're trying to win each one. So just trying to go play our best baseball and see what happens, really.
Do you have – I mean, now that you absolutely know, like, this is going to be the end of your baseball career, mm-hmm. I mean, how do you deal with that? Like, what are your feelings on that?
I think if you had asked me 2 years ago, it probably would have been a lot of, like, worry. But, I mean, I've gotten into my faith a lot, and then just, like, knowing that, like, I'm at peace with whatever happens, like, it's awesome because at the end of the day, baseball is just what I do. It's not who I am. And as much as I want to win, but it's more about just enjoying these last moments with my teammates.
That's so important as well as that realization that you're you and you're okay with or without this. Yeah. I love hearing that, man.
Yeah. I mean,
and speaking of, sorry.
Yeah. It's just kind of something that I think Hunter said it at one of our Bible studies, like I'm not defined by my success or failures on or off the field. It just goes back to our faith in Christ. So it's been really awesome.
That's great. And speaking of, you know, the next step, as Finney pointed out, you know, so you're going to be working with the Secret Service. Can you tell us about what made you interested in doing that? What are you looking forward to doing with that?
Yeah. So I still have a few hurdles to get through. I still have to pass a physical test in April, and then there's an interview and a polygraph and a background check. So it's not 100% certain yet, but I'm going to try to keep moving through it. The main reasons were, now that baseball is coming to an end, I still want to work with a team and work for something that's bigger than myself. And that's what I'll get to do. And they get some really cool training on how to shoot guns accurately and drive really fast. So
sounds like fun to me. I was going to ask, are you going to be more on the protective side of Secret Service or more on the finance side? It sounds like the protective side if you're getting
– If I get a choice, which I don't know if I will, I would just – I would love to do that. But, I mean, whatever they really want.
Up day one, like, I want the driving fast, shooting stuff section. Where that is, point me to that way. 100%. Are you like driving fast guy? Is that a thing you're into?
No, I really don't. But like, I would love to know how to do it if I had to.
Right, that's fair. Okay, I like that answer. That's a really good answer. It's like no, but train me and yes. Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's a good answer for the Secret Service. Will be reviewing our podcast this week for your eligibility. Yes. That's great. Great answer there.
It might be.
Well, I know the financial side is not that bad either, because a lot of people don't realize that they handle all the counterfeiting that happens in the U.S. And there's some pretty massive counterfeit rings. So you get to do some pretty wild things on that side, too. But either way, I mean, I think it's an awesome career. I love that you're kind of tying that into continue to be part of a team and accomplish like a shared mission.
100%.
And that's one thing I've always gotten from you, Jack, that it seems like you're one of the most important things to you is being out there with the guys. Would you, I mean, is that a fair statement to say that that's probably one of your biggest pluses for you with being with baseball?
100%. I mean, I don't know how much fun a sport would be if you didn't have teammates, really. Like, that they make the hard days easier and the days that are good, like, a lot more fun. So, like, I think back at baseball and when I'm done with it, it's going to be more about the people I got to spend time with.
Do you have a favorite teammate, either currently or in your recent years?
Oh, man.
If you have to, like, make everyone else feel bad and pick one. You can name a few. You don't have to pick one favorite.
I hope he doesn't listen to this because I don't want him to hear this. But it's definitely Maverick. We've been with each other all 5 years. We always give each other a hard time. But, yeah, that's my guy.
That's your guy. Okay. It's all right. So don't listen to that, Maverick. You're not special to Jack. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, as we're about to show him on a graphic that says he's the player of the week this week.
Starts warming up.
There you go.
Yep.
Well, Jack, we appreciate you, man. Awesome, Jack. I thoroughly enjoyed. Sorry. We're doing the same thing. Now, Jack, we appreciate you, man. I've thoroughly enjoyed the time you've been here, man, just from day one. Like, you're just you. You're just a really great person, and you're an ODU guy through and through. You know, it's exactly the kind of person we want to come and put on the uniform and play baseball here, man. So thanks for spending the time with us, and just thanks for being a Monarch, man. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for always being so welcoming and giving me this opportunity to come and hang out with y'all. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Appreciate thanks you, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jack.
Yep. Y'all have a good one.
Yeah, take care, man.
See ya.
What a good kid. What a good kid.
Yeah. It's awesome. He's going to make a great Secret Service agent, too.
Yeah, I believe it. He's also very good at being quiet, which I think is a big part of the job. And a lot of times, I mean, Jack is one of those guys like Jack will talk to you, no problem. But like, if you're in a situation where you're not supposed to talk, Jack will be very quiet. So I feel like that's a part of the job. It's just you talking to the wrist and then do that. And then I think you're good at it.
Yeah, I think he'll be well suited for it. He's already got the PitchCom ear, so I mean,
yeah,
he's all set.
He looks cool in sunglasses. Like, yeah, he's pretty well set. Yeah,
yeah, we'll not be catching him in like news clips 5 years from now, just like we're watching the guys that are in the minors.
That would be crazy to be watching TV and just like, is that Jack Slater? Like, okay,
Slate's made it. That's awesome.
Yeah, good for him.
Well. Here's an awful segue. Right. Speaking of awesome.
Hey, speaking of, you did mention it. Actually, it kind of already had the segue, so it's fine. But yes, so players of the week. It's about time we Maverick actually won the award, because he's pretty much been qualified every week. It just somebody else happened to have like maybe a hit or two more, RBI or two more. But so Maverick 8 for 17 this week, a double, a triple, two home runs, six RBIs, four runs scored, a walk. Just continue his dominance. That big home run that this is a picture from on Sunday was huge and swinging that game toward the Monarchs. The guy has just been, again, as we pointed out, just statistically, every year, the last 2 years before April 15th, he couldn't hit his weight. I mean, by a lot. and so him coming out and just dominating the ball the first 4 weekends here of non-conference play has been phenomenal. And then, of course, our other guys, the other usual suspects, right? TJ Akins, 6 for 18, double, triple, home run, two RBIs, five runs, a walk. Zach Late, 6 for 14, a homer, five RBIs. He's way up there in RBIs for the whole country. Tyler Zadalas, 6 for 16, a homer, three RBIs. And Mac Dye was 5 for 14, three RBIs. So that's been kind of the five guys who you pretty much be able to count on are going to hit in the lineup. Oh, my ear's falling out. Where's my ear going? Get back here, sir. Do your job.
I said you sneeze too hard and blow your AirPods out. I've seen that happen now. So
who knows? And then so that's the hitting side. Anything you want to say about hitters? I'm sorry. As I'm rambling on.
The home run that Mac Dye hit against VCU, I still don't think has officially come to a stop. That ball was absolutely tattooed out of that ballpark. I thought he did a pretty good job behind the plate. But love seeing that. But Maverick's home run that you captured there in that sequence is potentially my favorite picture of the year. And you may not like it because it's not like perfect photograph.
Pretty and edited.
But Chuck celebrating the home run with the rest of the crew there, Kellen slapping the board. I mean, that was the energy that they had on Sunday. And you could feel it throughout the entire game. Even, when UConn was battling back, you could feel that energy. But Chuck, he gets the award for most clean jumps over the brick wall. I think he had 5 in about 90 seconds at one point of the game on Sunday, shagging those balls out of foul territory. So I don't know. That picture just makes me really happy.
He's not a small guy to be jumping that brick either. But let's get our player of the week graphic back. We got to talk about our pitchers now. So Ben Tanton, the freshman, look at this. He had 2 appearances. We were even talking about it, I think, yesterday during the game. We were like, oh, Ben might be player of the week. And you're like, 3 innings. I'm like, he also pitched 2 scoreless on Wednesday. And you're like, oh, that's right. Yeah. So 2 games, 5 innings, no runs, 1 strikeout, no walks. I don't think he even gave up any hits. I didn't even write it down. I think he gave up no hits and all that. I mean, I think he faced, 15 and got them all down. Like, he was disgusting this week. I mean, that's huge. And seeing freshmen, I mean, obviously, we know he had another appearance that wasn't so great a week or two ago. He'll probably have an appearance in a week or so before where it won't be as great because that's just what happens to pitchers and freshmen. But for right now, Ben is locked in and it's awesome. And I keep giving him a hard time. He has like the biggest fan group of all time. Anytime I post a picture of Ben, it gets like 50 shares. Like he's well loved. So it's nice. Bailey also had a great week. I mean, he had the 1 appearance on Wednesday, picked up a win, kind of got his own save. As you pointed out, he was unhittable in addition to the light. I don't think the light was that bad, but it wasn't ideal lighting to hit in for sure. And we know when Bailey is on, he is nasty. Jace Park had another phenomenal appearance, 2 scoreless innings, 3 strikeouts. Darren Kusky, 4 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks is a little bit high for him, but he was pitching the ball where it needed to go, and he was getting ground balls that just weren't getting fielded. And so he really had a lot of bad luck in that one. Chris Cavalcante had a scoreless inning. He looked great. And then Patrick Johnson, I think he gave a couple of runs when he first came in of somebody else's, but he ended up with 2 2/3 scoreless on his own. So some pretty good appearances in what was not the best pitching week. I mean, we gave up 10 runs and a win and 14 and a loss. So, despite that, there were still some really good pitching appearances.
Ben was such a just stabilizing force this week in 2 games that could have definitely gone either way. I mean, the VCU game, it scored 3 in the ninth to do it, but he came in and kind of started stacking those zeros that
stacking
kind of
zeros.
Become the catchphrase for this pitching staff this year. But cool as a cucumber. I mean, high leverage, no high leverage, doesn't matter. I mean, he's going to fill the strike zone. He's going to get guys out. A lot of soft contact. That's really impressive from a freshman. It's really impressive in general against UConn's lineup to go one time through the order and not get tattooed by that monster they had playing first base. I actually just got him out. Like, It's really impressive. And that's just another one of these guys like a Jace Parker, someone that, you know, is younger and is leaning into a heavier role this year and is paying some dividends while some other guys are getting healthy.
Yeah, it's what you need, because like I said, with Marcus getting hurt in that first game, that, and then Hunter getting hurt back in the fall, that readjusts, you know, what you're going to have out of the bullpen. You know, you really believe that was two big time arms. Like, okay, well, you lost one early. We still thought, okay, we got Marcus. He's that utility knife, right? You can use him anywhere. And then not having them is like, man, guys are going to have to step. If we're going to have any kind of season worth talking about, guys are going to have to step up. And so hopefully you're starting to see it.
Yeah, it's been great to have those guys pull up, because, I mean, I don't know if we win on Sunday if Ben doesn't come in and throw us three scoreless, because we still had Kellen and Bailey that we could go to, but yeah, we don't have Okonkwo, who's typically pitched on some Sundays to eat some innings and get some guys out. Just big and kept the energy up, like getting those clean innings, quick innings back to the dugout. Saturday, I felt like we were on the field 95% of the time that that game was played. It was long innings, the leadoff guy getting on, a lot of innings, first two guys getting on safely.
Yeah.
And then we would come up, and UConn at that point was just filling the zone. They wanted to get out of there. And it was ground ball, pop fly, strikeout, back in the field 90 seconds later. So just having someone that can get the reverse of that and get us back in the dugout was huge this week. Big impact on getting the 2-2 record over the weekend.
Yeah, and I think you kind of joked about that after the bad loss on Saturday. It's like, you know, they might win tomorrow. They go 2-2, and you're like, this week wasn't that bad. it's funny how that goes. I mean, I think what you're seeing right now is this team's biggest issue is consistency. I think that hitting wise, a good amount of them are consistent, but then some of them aren't. Fielding wise, been a lot of inconsistency just all over the field. And then pitching, but a lot of inconsistency aside from a couple of guys. And so, you know, you're hitting the road now. You're at four games that are going to be tough this week, all on the road. You're in conference every weekend now. So now the wins of the weekend matter. You know, you want to win every single weekend. That's your goal, right? I mean, if you go 2-1 every weekend, you're going to have a good season, right? You're going to be, what is that? That's 20-10 in conference. 20-10 in conference usually got you second, third, maybe first, depending on how things go, right? So if you win every two out of three every weekend, you'll be fine. But to do that, you got to be more consistent. You got to step up, and you got to, like Finney said, you got to lock in, focus, or maybe breathe out of your eyelids if you're too focused.
Maybe if you guys adapting some gills to their eyelids for the rest of the season. But it is wild to think we are approaching conference play this weekend, going down to Troy for those two. And we need to get back in the mindset of, like, those are definitely the most critical of games. Like, ECU matters. Right. It's a rivalry. We want to beat them. We're going to try to beat them. But, again, we are saving our best bullets for the three that are in Troy. And I think it was last year of that six seed in or better is what you really need to have any success in the Sun Belt tournament. We got to that six seed last year. Still a very, very tough road. But it's one game that you have to play through. And if you want to be considered really in the top six, you're going to have to be above 500, even if it's one game above, two games above, three games above. So if we go and drop the first two to Troy, we need the same support for that final game, just like the UConn weekend, because we were saved last year because we salvaged some Sunday games for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I still think you want to be in the top three in the Sun Belt. I think if you're top three in the Sun Belt, you're probably going to the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
That's the reality. So if you can do that, which again, probably got to win two out of three every weekend. So I say until things start twisting in a different direction, you got to make some things right now before you head into it. Like, hey, look, we are aiming top three, not two, not three. That's our goal. But reality is just go out and just, again, pitch by pitch, win the moment. And if you win every moment, you're going to win the games. This is how it goes.
Yeah, get the bats going a little bit earlier. I know we faced the best pitching on Fridays and Saturdays, but it's kind of been a trend for OD last couple of years of a little offensive outage on those Friday games and starts kicking in later on in the week. So getting the bats going early. Maybe they're just tired from all the damn home runs they hit at VCU earlier in the week, because that was
a weird day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goodbye to the diamond, I guess. I doubt I'll be at another VCU game, and a lot of good times with the Diamond, man. I saw a lot of good baseball there. I saw, you know, Andre Jones playing when he was 19, and saw lots of future big leaguers and lots of really great baseball, and had a lot of great times. And I really like the Diamond. I'll miss it, and I feel like the new one, I'm sure I'll go to it, but it won't be the same.
Yes, it was a great date spot back in the day. That's actually my wife and I's first quote-unquote date was when I stole her from another date that she was on that night at the Diamond. Ooh, so definitely some good memories for me in that place, aside from working a lot of the Squirrels games.
Not just the base runners picking up steals of the game.
Hey, you got to steal the signs. And, hey, if you feed the ladies, that apparently worked for me. So that's my best dating advice out there for you.
There you go. Well, that sounds like a great way to end the podcast, because we're not topping Gary's dating advice.
Oh,
he's married and I'm not, so my dating advice would be terrible. Dating advice is usually break up. I feel like most relationships would be better if you would just break up. Yes. That'd solve a lot of your issues if you just break up.
Well, all right, you got it from both equations. Go to the Diamond before it closes and get a non-existent hot dog from the not open concession stand, or just break up. One of the two, somewhere there. Yeah. I had two ballpark related notes. One, UConn hit a home run ball into the left field stands. I don't know which team they're on, but another student athlete for ODU chucked it on the field. Congrats.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw him getting that ball back. That was great.
Yes. I heard somebody yell, "Give it to a kid." And I saw her look and then look back at the field and throw it right on there. So you did the right thing. Don't let anyone else tell you otherwise.
Do not ever – don't give it to a kid. If you're going to give it to somebody, give it to a sad adult. The kid doesn't need it. The kid has his whole life in front of him. Find a sad adult and give them the ball. It's going to change their day.
Yes. Well, TJ Akin hit one to the almost that exact same spot in the next inning. And I was like, all right, you give that one to a kid. Like, that's the one that goes to the kid.
Kids get too much. This is a hill I'll die on. Kids don't need a ball. No, I give the ball to a kid, but don't give it, find a sad adult. He's some sad guy. Looks like he needs a ball. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, hopefully there aren't too many sad adults coming to ODU baseball games, but we can
try. I want all those. Come out. If you're a sad adult, come to the game and be happy and find this great, wonderful community and this experience. Yes, I want the sad adults to come. Please, then they won't be sad. They won't. When we hand them the ball, then they won't be sad anymore. There you go. See, Gary, you're not, you can't only get the happy people. You got to bring the sad.
That's true. We got to bring them in and make them happy.
Strange turn of the end. I apologize to our normal viewers.
Well, speaking of that, make sure to follow us on social media at Hudson Homers. We get a lot of great engagement, but I think we're still under 100 followers on that X account. It just started, so it's not like super shocking, but we'll do something fun when we hit 500. So tell your friends. Maybe it's just a dating advice show from the two of us. I don't know. You can unfollow us from that.
About that.
And then also, if you've made it this long and you're still listening, if you send a DM to the Hudson Homers X account or Instagram account, I've got four ballpark passes for you to get into the future ODU home game out of my ticket booklet in there. So send those DMs. The first one in there will get the tickets. I'll get them to you before the next home game.
Sure. Slide in them DMs.
Yes. If they made it this far, they deserve free tickets.
There we go. They deserve something for this. Some kind of compensation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for listening. We greatly appreciate it. It's always nice chatting with people at the ballpark, getting feedback, all that fun stuff. We'll keep working on the pen clicks over here. I switched to a hockey puck today that only makes noise if I drop it, and then you can laugh.
Yeah.
Yes. Other than that, go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.